بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اللهم كن لوليك حجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها
طويلا. Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone slept well. When Jesus Christ warned his followers about what would happen if they decided to follow his message of peace and justice and compassion, he told them that everyone that had any significance in their lives would abandon them. He said, I have not come to bring peace and quiet, but the sword. And he didn't mean literally to go and hack people to pieces, but rather that he was going to divide truth from lies. And he warned his followers, if you follow me, a father will turn against his son, a son against his father, a mother against her daughter, and a daughter against her mother. He said, but I will not leave you orphans. And, you know, in the Western mind, where we think very literally about things, the surface meaning of that, again, to the Western mind as well, I guess we wouldn't lose our parents. But, of course, in that part of the world, you know, a small statement such as that could have layers of meanings. And to be an orphan in that part of the world didn't necessarily just mean that you would lose your parents, but your entire family, which is absolutely necessary for your survival physically and your survival spiritually, because the family is everything. It's the beating heart that feeds the whole body. So to be an orphan in that part of the world meant that everything of any importance to you that would help you survive physically and spiritually would be taken from you. And so when Jesus promised that if you follow me and you lose everything of any meaning to you, but I will not leave you orphans, what he was saying in fact was it will be replaced with new things that have been taken from you. You will have new fathers and new mothers and new sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles. There will be new light. And so what he was saying was is that we're going to replace this old system with a new system here. And you do not have to worry. If you sacrifice all of these things for my sake or for the sake of justice, I will replace them with even better ones. You know, if I take away this small candle that provides very little light, I'm going to replace it with this much larger one. And so, Jesus, making good on his promises, has given us new brothers and new sisters and new lights to follow the truth. I personally can attest to this, particularly as a Christian who decided to befriend the Muslim community and to speak out as a Christian about the beauties that are found within the Islamic religion, within the Islamic culture. Many of my Christian friends and relatives did not like this at all. They still do not like this. And of course, every year at Christmas time, the Christmas cards get thinner and thinner, and the phone calls become less frequent. But they have been replaced now. You see, I have new brothers and new sisters and new aunts and uncles and cousins and all of that. One of them is here today. I met him on a radio program about 6 or 7 years ago that we were both asked to appear on. And we were commenting, I believe, on Israel's bombardment of Gaza. I think this was 2006. And when I heard him, I thought, boy, he really has got it together. Very smart, very articulate, obviously follows the news, knows what he's talking about. And after the program, I contacted the host and I said, could you put me in touch with him? And the host put us in touch with each other, and literally within 5 minutes, again, as I said last night in introducing my much older and wiser brother, Dr. Hisham Talawi, within 5 minutes, I realized that I had yet another twin brother that we had been separated from birth, and we had been rejoined. And he has been like a brother to me since that time. Like me, he is a Christian, but he has a great love and respect for the Islamic people, for the Islamic culture. He has had the honor and the privilege of actually having lived in Iran for a short time, many years ago. And so when he speaks on his weekly radio program, which you can find at The Ugly Truth, if you just look up his name and type in The Ugly Truth, you'll be able to find his archived radio programs, as well as his appearances on Press TV. I'm sure that you will find him to be just as wise and interesting as I have. His name is Mark Dankoff. He is a Lutheran pastor in San Antonio, Texas, and he is one of the best speakers, one of the best minds that I have found when it comes to understanding the problems that both our peoples are dealing with today, the Islamic and the Christian peoples. And as I said in introducing this topic tonight, Jesus has not allowed us to remain orphans, so I would ask all of you to give a round of applause to your new brother that you didn't know about for many years, and it is Mark Dankoff. Mark, come on up.
Fünf und dreißig Minuten, 35 minutes. All right. I have a voice that tends to carry, so I think you can all hear me. Everything okay? Good. Okay, Mark. See, people in a radio studio can't see me doing this, but I'm positioning the watch. My eyesight has declined, lo these many decades. I think I can still see the watch from here. Let me open by saying that there are four Mark Dankoffs visually. The first one is the one you see on press television where I'm in a business suit and a British regimental striped tie, white dress shirt, all the layout so that I look good on television, what's left of me all these years later. The second Mark Dankoff that you see visually is the one you can see at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in San Antonio. You're not likely to be there, but if you look up Emmanuel Lutheran Church of San Antonio, you can see what I look like in a robe. A Lutheran pastor's robe, an ordination stall, a stole and crucifix, and so forth and so on. There's a third Mark Dankoff visually, and that's the Mark Dankoff that goes to the gym in San Antonio and wears a sweatsuit and looks really old and very tired and very sweaty as I'm trying to maintain what is left of my 57-year-old body. And finally, the fourth Mark Dankoff is the one that you're getting visually today, where I'm wearing a golf shirt and blue jeans and walking shoes. The reason for that appearance is I just drove over here to hear Muhammad Al-Asi and Mark Glenn and Hisham Talawi. Didn't know until I was driving over here that somebody actually wanted me to say something briefly from the podium. So this is highly unusual, but you're getting the version of me that's generally seen by my wife and my rescue dogs in San Antonio when I'm lounging around in the house. That's not usually the way I look when I'm trying to speak to people publicly, but that's the way I look today. Let me open then by talking about Psalm 90 and 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8 from the Christian New Testament. One day with the Lord is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day, or as a watch in the night when it is past. That's the only scripture I'm going to quote today, because it deals with something that we agree upon both as Christians and as Muslims. Predominantly Shiite Muslims here this morning, I think, with one exception. Dr. Talawi represents the Sunni community. But we all agree about certain things as it relates to the divine and to time. Time produces biological aging. If you see me at the gym, you'll be reminded of that one. Time produces change. At the same time, time produces continuity. Time produces differences in perspective as we get older. And one of the great ironies, and I talked about this in South Africa some days ago, Durban, South Africa, speaking at the Al Ansar Center to a group of people of the Sunni Islamic faith, and that is how time changes whom we view as friends sometimes, and whom it is that we view as enemies and adversaries. Now, this is important because I have probably a profile different from that of virtually anyone else in the room, including Mark Glenn. If you look at me now and go back 35 or 40 years ago to when I was young, it's rather amazing that I'm now standing here in Houston, Texas, talking to you not as a potential or a real adversary, but as a friend. I'm white. I'm German-American. I used to be a big-time advocate and activist in the Republican Party. I was on a first-name basis with people you would know. Among many other things, as recently as 1988, I was doing the invocation for George Herbert Walker Bush at the Sheraton Hotel in Seattle when he was running for the presidency of the United States against Michael Dukakis. I was on a Christian 50,000-watt radio station. I was widely known in Seattle. I was the chairman of the 36th Legislative District of the Republican Party, which, if you know King County, Seattle, is the largest and most influential state legislative district in that state. I would later, as recently as 1994, be in a private gathering with George W. Bush at a party. That's when he was running for governor of Texas. I was supporting him in what proved to be my last involvement in anything of that type in the Republican Party, in an attempt, what proved to be a successful attempt, to unseat Governor Ann Richards as governor of this state. But then in 1996, after my second go-around was supporting Pat Buchanan's attempt to get the Republican presidential nomination, I would leave the Republican Party because I had figured something out. The Republican Party, and if you want to get very technical about it, the Democratic Party in the United States, does not represent you or me. Why? Because you as Muslim people, I as a legitimate Christian person, have a lot in common. A lot more in common than we do in disagreement. The American news media and the Zionist lobby notwithstanding. And when we look at who our mutual adversary is, when we look at who it is that is directing American foreign policy, not to your betterment or mine with the demographics that I represent, and certainly not to the betterment of the world, we have to ask ourselves what it is that's going on here. My late father was a United States Air Force officer for 32 years. He spent a dozen years after that working for the Lockheed Corporation in the Middle East. You start getting into my father's resume, you discover that he had more than a passing acquaintance with the American Central Intelligence Agency for quite a number of years. My father, at one point in his career, after he left the American military, was a chief of Air Force logistics for Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi's Imperial Iranian Air Force for 5 years before the Islamic Revolution. My father changed hats after that revolution, went to Saudi Arabia, became a director of logistics for the Royal Saudi Air Force for 5 years before he fully retired. That is the type of profile and the type of family background that I have. I am not being honest with you if I don't tell you that. Just as I told the people at Al-Ansar Center that the other day in Durban, South Africa. I want you to understand who I've been and where I've been and what has shaped and influenced my life. When I tell you now at the age of 57 that the world looks a lot different to me than it did at the age of 20, or than it did at the age of 25 when Ronald Reagan was first elected President of the United States and I was in a Christian seminary in Chicago. I actually believed at that time that America was turning the corner and becoming a better place because Ronald Reagan had been elected President of the United States. And now, 32 years going on, the United States is not a better place, but it's far worse. All of you have read, I'm sure, about a $16 or $17 trillion national debt. You've all read about an unfunded liability in Social Security and Medicare of $222 trillion. You've read about the Federal Reserve Board and the printing of fiat money. You've read about the power and ownership of our elections and our news media by Zionist interests and multinational corporate interests. You've seen with your own eyes, as you've been in this country, many of you for some years now, that we are a more decadent society, a more immoral society, a more violent society than we've ever been. This is no longer the America of my parents and grandparents. This is an America that I don't recognize from when I was young. And from the time that John Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas on November the 22nd, 1963, all these 49 years later, I'm no longer an 8-year-old kid in a public school in Montgomery, Alabama, while my father was at the Air War College at Maxwell Air Force Base. I'm a 57-year-old man who somehow, someway, by God's grace, has come to understand more than I wish I knew and understood about who and what it is that was behind that killing. Who and what it is that has been beyond and behind the progressive declension in American morals and spiritual standards. Who and what it is that has destroyed the economy of this country for the average American. Who and what it is that controls the American news media and the American mind and is warping thousands upon thousands upon thousands of millions of American minds to support something that isn't in their interest, it isn't in your interest, and it isn't in my interest. And that's a war between the United States and Israel on the one hand and Iran on the other. Or a great neoconservative Zionist vision for a war of civilizations that will pit the remaining Christian population of the West, however small that has shrunk to, in fact, and the Islamic world. And so we ask ourselves, who wins? Who loses? Who really benefits by these policies? You know, and I know, as devout Muslim and Christian people, who can still think, by God's grace, the American news media and the American educational process and Hollywood notwithstanding, who are still able to think and to analyze and to process information and to come to seminars like this one. We understand that Americans who represent my demographics and who still have a mind and who still have a soul, and Islamic peoples who are peacefully living in the United States and who the Zionist lobby notwithstanding do not truly threaten the United States, or the coexistence of Christian peoples and Islamic peoples together, we have it figured out. We've got a mutual enemy. We have a mutual adversary. Your spiritual lives, your theology, your families, your communities, your livelihoods, your personhoods are being threatened by the same thing that threatens me. And that has destroyed the America that my grandparents and great-grandparents knew when they came here from Germany, that my parents knew as young people growing up in the American Midwest at the time of the Great Depression of the 1930s. From the time of the Second World War and the great fraud that was perpetrated on the American public by Franklin Delano Roosevelt and a false flag operation known as the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor that galvanized an entire American citizenry to support something that looked one way and that they thought was a great and righteous cause that had completely unintended consequences because they really didn't understand the forces that were behind it, became a generation later the assassination of John and Robert Kennedy. Became a generation later Israel's attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967, and the systematic withholding of information from the American public as to how all of that happened. We became the America of the Pollard spy case and the IPAC spy cases. We became the America of 9/11. So that I, the great white Republican Christian hope of years ago, could be before Islamic radio audiences in South Africa and could be invited to speak live at the Al-Ansar Center to hundreds of Islamic peoples of Sunni persuasion who had heard me on the radio and wanted to know more. All of a sudden, I'm telling them, as someone who is still a Christian, who still loves America, even though I'm sickened by what we've become, and I am sickened by what has co-opted our country. I am sickened by it. And as one who is an ex-Republican, and as one who came from an American military family, where my father now rests in Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, D.C., in Section 54, Grave 4028, virtually at the foot of where John Kennedy is buried, I'm telling them there's something wrong with this 9/11. There's something wrong with what really happened to John Kennedy. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at all of American history, as well as the history of at least the last 2,000 years, if not longer, and I'm beginning to understand how this game is played. Beginning to understand how this game works. Beginning to understand the power of the international bankers and the power of the multinational corporate news media that they own, the power of the governments of the Western world in particular and the United States government specifically that they've been able to purchase. If you don't believe that, Sheldon Adelson, the Zionist Jew, right, who owns the Sands Casino in Las Vegas, he was more than happy to pump $100 million of his petty cash. That meant to him about what it meant to me paying a couple of tolls out here on the Sam Houston Tollway to get here to this engagement, right? To influence, to purchase, to own American elections and all that's implied by it. And now we stand at the threshold of a third world war. A war that's going to destroy the lives of thousands upon millions of people unless God intervenes in his providential wisdom and gets it stopped, chooses to stop it. A war that will destroy untold numbers of lives and families of people that believe they're doing the right and godly thing by supporting it and getting their kids to sign up for it and who will believe all of the propaganda in the American media, on television, purchased and otherwise, that will underscore that this is supposed to be some great moral, righteous crusade. How can you have a great and moral crusade in a country which supports abortion on demand, homosexual marriage, and the type of perversion and violence and evil that you can go right down here to the Shell station and see what's on that magazine rack when you're walking in there to buy a bottle of water, or when you see the sewage that is routinely being conveyed to the minds of people in this country when they're watching television or when they go to 98% of our movies, or when they're watching political advertisements that feature Benjamin Netanyahu, right, in the state of Florida, trying to convince people that the election of one of these two guys is some great moral crusade. This is the state to which we have fallen. This is the stage to which we have come. And so whether you've got my demographics or yours, the fact of the matter is we have a mutual enemy, a mutual adversary, and we are living at a very dangerous time in history. How dangerous is it? A handful of years ago, there was a news leak of something going on in the state of Missouri that indicated that the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith had convinced our so-called post-9/11 Homeland Security Department that the greatest threat to American society, representing the biggest and most significant generalized terrorist profile, was, curiously enough, not Islamic peoples, not Arabs, not Persians, not Palestinians, but guys that look and sound a lot like Mark Glenn and Mark Dankoff. White guys who go to church, who don't favor gay marriage and support the pro-life position on abortion, and legally own firearms, and are trying to warn people about Zionist New World Order influence. We, according to this profile that emerged from Missouri state law enforcement, courtesy of both our federal Homeland Security Department and the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, guys that sound and look like Mark Dankoff and Mark Glenn and Michael Collins Piper of the American Free Press, we're now the bad guys. Really? I thought we were out of the tradition of Thomas Jefferson and H.L. Mencken and Harry Elmer Barnes, right, and people like that. We are, in the best sense of the word, patriotic Americans. We're American nationalists. We happen to be Christians of different persuasions. But all of a sudden, according to what has taken over this country, we are perceived as being as much an enemy of this society as that society's news media is saying about each and every one of you who is gathered here. And this is why Mark Glenn and Hisham Talawi envisioned this Crescent and Cross Foundation some years ago to build a bridge between the Islamic and truly Christian communities in this country and around the world, so that we might work together and understand one another better, understand the mutual threat that is posed to each of our communities by what's going on, and might be in a better position to defend ourselves. Now, this then gets into something that happened a few months ago as we think about time. One day with the Lord is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day, even as a watch in the night when it is past. All of a sudden, I'm not some naive 20 or 25-year-old kid believing that I was changing the world by helping Ronald Reagan get elected president of the United States. I'm suddenly hearing from my radio colleague and close partner, Mark Glenn, that he had been personally warned by Dr. Philip Giraldi in Washington, D.C. Dr. Giraldi was a Central Intelligence Agency station chief in a couple of different countries. He's a correspondent with Pat Buchanan's magazine, The American Conservative. He heads up something called the Council for the National Interest, which agrees with Mark Glenn and Mark Dankoff and Mike Piper and Hisham Talawi that supporting the Zionist lobby is not in the national interest of the United States. It's to the detriment of the national interest of the United States, the true national interest, and it's to the detriment of average people like you and me who claim rightly to be Americans. What was Dr. Giraldi's message to Mark Glenn? That this last presidential election might in fact be the last one. That he saw many dangerous developments just out there on the horizon, not too far away. And that he, Dr. Philip Giraldi, didn't care who knew it. He didn't care if we talked about this in the radio. He's thinking of becoming a long-term American expatriate in South America someplace. And he said, you know Mark Glenn, you know Mark Dankoff, you know Mike Piper, might not be a bad idea if you guys think about going somewhere to Latin America. Because with your political profiles and the things that you're saying and the things that you're urging people to consider, you guys and I might be among the first people rounded up in a new wave of totalitarian zealotry that might make what happened after 9/11 child's play by comparison. And so that's why in these last couple of years, I went to see Matthias Chang in Malaysia last year, checked out South Africa this year, did some radio work over there, was involved in some things related to a Lutheran church ministry there for a couple of weeks in Durban, to kind of see what it was like in South Africa. I then at some point will probably in the next year or two, if I even have that much time, time's a precious commodity, might try to check out a couple of places in Latin America. Because this thing has reached a point where a guy with my skin color, an Orthodox Christian of German Lutheran background, an anti-communist, a pro-life Christian, someone who supports traditional marriage, someone who believes in the American Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all that represents, and whose father was a long-standing member of the American military and national security communities, has suddenly been told by someone else who fits some of those demographics, Dr. Philip Giraldi, that maybe we'd better get out of Dodge. Because the United States of Israel is potentially knocking at the door. And where the America of Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and the America of Harry Elmer Barnes and John T. Flynn and H.L. Mencken is about to become the America of Benjamin Netanyahu, the America of Sheldon Adelson, the America of Menachem Begin, and the America of all these Jewish propagandists that are on Fox News and CNN and all of these other establishment media outlets night after night after night after night after night, who have the American public convinced that all of you out there are dangerous people and your enemies. But then the next message, which is starting to gain steam, is that it's the Mark Dankoffs and the Mark Glenns and the Michael Collins Pipers and the Hisham Talawis that are going to have to be put away next. And as I close today, I leave you with a thought. And the thought is this: whether you are a Muslim person of goodwill and good faith, or you are a Christian who represents that, the God we mutually believe in is going to win. Evil is not going to triumph. Whether you're looking at Islamic eschatology or Christian eschatology, the fact of the matter is, with all the power that these evildoers have, the control they have of news media, the control they have of world governments, the control they have of the banking system, they're not going to win. Because the sovereign God of history and eternity and of all of human affairs and relationships is on our side. And that if we are faithful, no matter how dark the skies become, we're going to win. And you know, as I close today, that's my message of hope to you. We're going to win. A 20-year-old guy who's suddenly 57 and who feels like he's lost his country and who's lost many of his fellow family members who have, like in Mark Glenn's situation, been co-opted by these brainwashing forces that have grabbed a hold of some of our friends and loved ones. I ought to be so pessimistic about this that I can't even breathe. But something happened to me on the way back from South Africa that, with all of the impact that I had in a very short period of time there that I wasn't planning on because of these radio broadcasts on Al Ansar and Channel Islam International, the Zionist lobby was so scared that they went to the South African Broadcasting Corporation and ensured that if anyone approached them about getting Dankoff on the South African Broadcasting Corporation nationwide state radio channel, that they weren't going to allow that. It made me feel good. I'd gotten under somebody's skin during the brief period of time that I was there, right? But what really had me feeling good was when I was returning here to Houston from Dubai, and then had to drive 3.5 hours to the west to get home in San Antonio. Unbeknownst to me, when that aircraft left Dubai, we're going over Bandar Abbas, Iran. And then we're banking in such a way that we're coming right through the heart of Iran, and I was seeing things visually that I hadn't seen in over 35 years when I was a young person. To my west, there was this north-south axis between Shiraz and Isfahan and Tehran. And just to my east, what I could see visually out of the right side of the aircraft, there's this axis going from Kerman all the way up to Mashhad. And as we're coming through the very heart of Iran, and I'm seeing all that familiar landscape with the low-level desert sands interspersed with beautiful jagged mountains and occasional mountains that had snow caps on them. And as I began to feel better and better and better just in that brief period of time in Iranian airspace, all of a sudden, I had this magnificent view right out my window of Mount Damavand. There it was, 18,406 feet up in the air, whatever it's supposed to be, 5,700 some odd meters. This beautiful view of Mount Damavand and the surrounding valley. I had this majestic view of Lar Valley, where my late father and I used to go fishing every year when I would be over there visiting him in Tehran. And all of a sudden, in the span of time, I wasn't 57 years old anymore. I was suddenly a 19-year-old kid again, thinking about the days when I could run 100 yards literally in under 10 seconds, the days when I didn't seem to have too many cares in the world, and I was the cleanup hitter on an Air Force fast-pitch softball team that was playing in North Tehran in those days at the old American Gulf District military base. I was with my late father again, who was still in his prime, in my thoughts, and we were out there fly casting again as we were wading into the river that was running through Lar Valley. All of a sudden, I remembered my days as a young person in Tehran when I was running the vacation Bible school again for the community church of Tehran. All of a sudden, I remember those marvelous days when I used to walk around in all the different sectors of that city, unafraid, meeting all kinds of wonderful people whose language I could not speak, and I still can't speak it, but where I sensed this great commonality, that we had far more in commonality spiritually and morally and personally than many of my alleged peers back in the United States that were part of a culture that was already headed in the wrong direction, already going south when I was young. And all these years later on this Emirates flight between Dubai and Houston, It was as if God diverted the plane and gave me this brief experience seeing this wonderful country again where I had spent much of my youth. Because the minute we departed Iranian airspace, something happened. The minute we departed Iranian airspace and we're over Azerbaijan, the GPS in front of me and the seat in front of me, in seat 50K where I was, tells me I'm over Baku, but all of a sudden this marvelous visibility that I had had ended. I couldn't see a thing. There was cloud cover all the way through the Balkans, all the way through Central Europe, that kept me from seeing really anything out of that window until we had already gone over Norway and Sweden and were entering into the area known as the Atlantic Ocean. It was as if God had kept that visibility there for me for a time between Bandar Abbas and Mount Damavand and Lar Valley, right through that section of the Caspian that you could still see before all of a sudden visibility ended and I was out of Iranian airspace. I'll never be able to prove this, but I have the strongest sense that that was God's personal sign to me. That despite the fact that I've wondered if my life was over, wondering if I had ever accomplished anything with anything I'd ever tried to do, up to and including my work with people like Mark Glenn, Hisham Talawi, which financially, personally, and politically has often gone absolutely nowhere. And we talked about this last night at Denny's. And yet these three psychotics are still in this line of work together. Why? Because try as we might to get away from this, it's like God won't let us. He won't let this Roman Catholic over here or this Sunni Muslim guy over here, this Palestinian guy who's supposedly my enemy. He won't let these guys or me, the German Lutheran who used to just love the Republican Party and Ronald Reagan, he won't let any of us go. We are in this fight to the finish. And that brief visual I had of Iran again out of that Emirates Airlines window going from Dubai and Houston told me something. Hang in there, God is saying to all of us, because you're not on the losing team, even though it feels like it. You've already won. The fruits of that victory are yet future. And for the remaining Christians of the West who've not been bought off by Zionist influence and money and worldly prestige, and for Islamic peoples presently involved in a great struggle with these same forces that have largely already destroyed my culture and Mark Glenn's, we're going to win. You're going to win. I'm going to win. People like us of goodwill around the world are going to win. Why? Because the great God of history, the great God of our lives, who knew us before we were even conceived in our mother's wombs, who knew our names, who knew every aspect of our lives, and who had commissioned us to be used in his purposes in history, he's conveying to us that the victory is ours. And that despite every illusion that we've lost, we haven't. That good and great and marvelous things are just ahead for you and me. As God uses us together in history with the widely differing backgrounds that we have to bring something to pass together that is going to precede the end of history and the beginning of our lives together with God in eternity. One day with the Lord is like 1,000 years. 1,000 years as one day, or as a watch in the night when it is past. God bless you.